Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
So today we're going to continue talking about post-traumatic growth and specifically kind of this area of, this area of awakening and what it means as part of the post-traumatic growth experience. So we go back to the ways we measure post-traumatic growth is appreciation of life, relationship with others, new possibilities in life, personal strength, and spiritual change. And as we develop and transform through healing, we see that our values, our experiences, and where we put our time and energy, and even our creative process can adapt as well. And this goes into how we move forward into allowing the experience. How do I want to say this? It's always hard to talk about post-traumatic growth and this part only because when we use terms like surrender and we use terms like gratitude, a lot of people worry that that means that they have to be grateful or they surrender to the idea of the trauma themselves.
And I'm grateful for the person that hurt me or something like that.
Right.
Grateful for the trauma I went through.
Right. So when we use those terms, what it is I am grateful. I appreciate life differently. I am grateful for my maybe improved or deeper relationships with others. I'm grateful to see new possibilities. I'm grateful for personal strengths and spiritual change. And the same thing to surrender. It's not about surrendering to the trauma. It's about surrendering to the process of I went through something and it changed me. And that's okay. I see the world differently.
And I've seen gratitude about that I've seen and experienced gratitude for like the spiritual change you're talking about or the strengths that have increased or been developed because of what we've been through. And I think that that could be easily confused for gratitude for what we've been through. And maybe there's overlap there that, you know, I'm glad I went through it because of the outcome, but I wouldn't choose to go through it again. I'm not grateful for what was done to me.
Mm-hmm. I know that is something that I've experienced. I see the benefits of some of the things that I've gone through in my life, but I wouldn't choose them again. But I can directly tie them to my work as a therapist or how I show up for my family or my spiritual belief system and those kinds of things. For me, those are highly tied into my life experiences and the things that I experienced and survived.
And I think when we're coming from a traumatic experience, especially ones that were not brought about because of our own actions, sometimes those ones that are brought about with our own actions, for myself, I've had a history of this in the past, and a lot of my clients, there is almost this reluctance to admit that there's almost this weird reluctance that it's like, I have to say and put myself in a position and say, you know what, I would make the same choice or mistake or go through the exact same thing just to learn this lesson again. And I think
there's stubbornness about it.
Yeah. And I remember at one point feeling the same way and realizing later in life, after more experience, more healing, more things like that, of saying, there's actually a way to disengage that of saying, I can appreciate the lesson I've learned, but I can also state, and I wish I'd never had to go through that. I wish I could have learned a whole different way of having to go through this than saying like, there would have been no other way for me to learn this specific lesson, but besides going through this traumatic event or these traumatic events. And I think as you learn and as you grow and as you heal, you start to recognize that you can actually separate those traumatic events from the lesson and state, I would have loved to have one and without having the other. And so part of what you're stating, I know, I'm not saying those who feel that they have to go through the same traumatic event or haven't gone through as much healing, but I do kind of want to say, if you're in that point of saying, I can only have one with the other, I can't have them separate. That does kind of indicate to me, at least, of like, oh, that's a lot to carry. That's a lot to carry on your own, saying like, you have to recreate the event perfectly to have the same learning opportunity. Wouldn't it have been nice to not have to?
I think it's a way that people make meaning from their
exactly. Suffering. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I like is that as we as therapists work with this, if there is any of that pushback of someone feeling like we're minimizing your pain or suffering your experience when we go into this topic, that you don't have to go there. It's not required. You don't have to go into this area of post-traumatic growth if that's uncomfortable. It may be triggering. It may be it's okay to say, nope, I don't appreciate it, and I'm sure there was a different way to learn that. It's okay to say that. So don't say that the only way to grow after this is only to move into gratitude. It is just common enough that the research shows that this is a stage of growth.
And it could just be peaceful neutrality, right? I'm doing this mindfulness course and I'm really loving it. And it's this whole idea of like, I'm just going to accept that it happened. I'm not going to have any judgment. Like in the end, I think that is the ultimate healthiness, right? Getting to the point of, I'm just going to accept it happened. I'm going to accept I learned a lesson. I'm going to not have have an emotional extremism to it. I can just accept it. I can also accept the emotions I have about the scenario. I can accept what I'm feeling about it. I'm just going to accept it and then allow it to, as they say, like, have it on a cloud, float it away, float it down a river, just observe and just let it float by. And I think that with what we're talking about with that, they're definitely in this phase specifically is a lot of work that can be done to just get to this point where you don't have to feel that you have to make the trauma experience okay for you to accept the lesson and the qualities you were able to garnish from what happened.
I do think that this allows for you to reevaluate relationships and values in those. So sometimes, especially if the trauma happened early in life, it's normal for children and even teenagers to have very black and white thinking of there's only one right and there's only one wrong. And but when you experience things, you get a chance to reevaluate. And mm-hmm. I won't tell you how to reevaluate. That's not a therapist's job, but the job is really to help you become more authentically you in this process. So instead of feeling like you have to pigeonhole yourself into life and you have to hide all the parts of you that experience trauma, that the goal is to find a way to live your life in the authentic way of, I am somebody who has survived and experience trauma, and I am valuable and important part of my community, my family, my religious group, and those kinds of things, and that I don't have to hide that away.
Mm-hmm. Before we start recording, we talked about Viktor Frankl. His work was changed because of his experience in the concentration camps. He found that essentially, this is a little oversimplifying his really great work, that we can survive pretty much anything as long as we have a purpose or a meaning. And it doesn't really matter if the purpose or meaning is true, so long as we make it ourselves. And that's something that ties into post-traumatic growth, that what is the meaning we make of our life, or what is the meaning we make of what we've been through? And it doesn't matter if other people agree with us. What is the purpose for why we've been through what we've been through? Trauma therapy, the three of us are trained in, often during the model, we'll ask, how come you went through, ask your brain that in so many words. And people will come up with a new insight, and it's very relieving or energizing. It's a very positive experience for people.
Mm-hmm. As you say that, Taylor, I even find, especially when we do ART work, that I find that not everybody chooses to reframe trauma as if it never happened. Sometimes they use those therapies to actually reframe it in a way to say, I survived it better, or something was, I had support, or I had an attachment figure that would have made this feel more comfortable for me. So I'm always interested to see that people know what they need to heal and to move into this meaning-making process. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say back to what you're saying, like people know what they need. Like you may not come into a scenario and say, I need this to heal and this to heal and this to heal. It's not always as easy as saying, I have a cut. I need to get a suture. I need to get this. I need to get that. But your body just, we've talked about this in other episodes too. Your body knows what it needs. It needs protection, it needs this, it needs that. Just as your body, you know, when you are dehydrated and it tells you you need water, when you have low sodium and it tells you you need some sort of salt, when it tells you your blood sugar's low and you need something to bring it up, right? Your body also has that same inclination. It is wired to survive. Okay. And I think I said this in the very beginning. There's a reason why people have a hard time ending their life at times. Is because your body is wired to survive. It is wired to gasp for air when you need to. It is wired to stand up if you are hurt and you need to, and things like that. And so when it comes to the emotional standpoint, your body is also wired to do that, which sometimes, unfortunately, the protection mechanism kind of stays on for too long. It's almost like someone being in a panic room and it's protecting them for too long and they can't get out and they need to rewire to make sure they can get out when they want to. But your body will do the same thing emotionally. So when it comes to these types of things, just have, I think that's the biggest thing that I work with people on, is have faith, have some, you know, trust that your body will do what it needs to do.
I really love that, because I think, of course, when we're in pain, we wish there was some kind of prescribed Band-Aid, right? Like, mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to get this many therapy sessions and then I'm going to get this level of healed. And I think when the injury is complicated, whether it be physical, emotional, relational, that the healing can be not concrete. And in that way, it can be this process of learning about yourself deeper. And that's actually what moves us into those ideas of reevaluating our value system and realigning with our belief system. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we see a lot through trauma is going through grief. So I always like to reflect back to the stages of grief. And one that has been added, a lot of people talk about the 5 stages of grief, which are very well known, but the 6th stage of grief that was added by David Kessler says that this is the idea of after the loss and after going through all the stages that we go into finding meaning, and that this is a normal part of the grief process. And I think that can be helpful for those people who see it as overly positive. It's not necessarily that I like how life has changed even, or I prefer, like we talked about, that I prefer to be on the other side of this trauma, but it is about, I've learned to move forward. I've learned to rethink about my life and how I do things. And just coming out of, you know, all our different episodes on trauma, you can look at, there are so many ways that we can be hurt, but that we as human beings are very capable of taking difficult situations and moving into a way to reinvest it in a way that we can say, I can heal and I can move forward. Mm-hmm. And I've actually seen that be very powerful when people reach back to other survivors and other people who've gone through that, and they say things like, Me Too. And I don't mean to just bring up the Me Too movement, but that idea of you're not alone. Because compassion, one of the keys to self-compassion is knowing that you're not alone.
I love the story behind the Me Too movement. I was listening to a podcast of Brené Brown, and she was interviewing the woman behind it, and also just, you know, reading a bit about the history. Because originally it wasn't the same as it is now. It was a group of, I believe, lower economic and a really, you know, not great part of a city, that they were recognizing there was a lot of women who had gone through sexual trauma, and there were a lot of teen girls who were going through it, and they were having a hard time having the teen girls talk about it and discuss it and bring it up. And so what they ended up doing is having women who were older in the community coming to these teen girls in this kind of urban group and telling them like, hey, I've been through it too. Like, this is what I had to do to work through it. And this is my experience with it. And so it started with this very grassroots community type of scenario. And it's definitely blown up since then. And sometimes for the better. And sometimes it's, you know, maybe not the most helpful depending on the group, but it has always been, like you said, this idea of taking people who have gone through a trauma and they're going through a growth aspect of saying, I can just volunteer my information of saying I've been there too, right? And that is part of that healing process. Not to state that I go to everyone and I state I was also hurt and let me tell you about my hurt experience, but simply saying, no, I understand where you're at. I understand what's going on. And feeling that you can do that. Some people get to a healing stage and they never feel the need to do that. And that is totally fine, right? But this is just one that we're highlighting of often seeing that healing of trauma, what it looks like as they go on for it.
Especially when we have disenfranchised experiences where we don't talk about those types of traumas very often. And you might not know how to connect to other people who've had a similar experience. It is really powerful to be able to have that conversation. And if we look at other things like Erickson's model of, you know, different parts of our life and what we're trying to accomplish in those parts of life. In our adulthood, one of the things that we do is we reinvest in others and we mentor. And that's part of moving through adulthood and not early adulthood, but in that phase. And I think it's interesting to see then as people do move past their active stress, their active coping, their active those things, that they might find seen or unseen ways to go through this meaning making or reinvestment process that can be very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Example from Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl's book, that comes to mind as a quick example is a man lost his wife. She passed away. And he was in a really deep depression. And Viktor Frankl was meeting with him and said, if your roles were reversed and you had passed away and your wife were here, what do you think it would be like for her? And he said, it would be awful for her. She would be devastated. And he realized the meaning he made out of his trauma was that he was carrying the burden for his wife by being the one behind. And so he found meaning in his suffering. Mm-hmm. So kind of the difference between suffering and misery is often whether there is meaning in it.
I want to make sure that we touch on this idea that it's very normal to go through a reevaluation of values and goals. Did we touch on that enough? Because
a little bit at the very beginning. Let's dive into
Yeah, it. I definitely want, I want to make sure that we're going into that because, you know, life and our perspective of the world will shift. And so there are three ways that we see value shift that are mentioned in post-traumatic growth in this area. One is the creative way. So you may find that you're more apt to write or to journal. You might get into art and those kinds of expressions. We see that happen, and that's one of the ways that people process emotion. There's a lot of research there. A lot of it is experiential. Haley, I love that you brought up the idea of meditation and learning to sit with your emotions. And we talked last episode about just learning to be more present with yourself. But those kinds of experiences and appreciations are very normal shifts that come with this part. And then as well as just attitudes, that idea of I can see things from more perspectives. And so I understand the world differently. And I'm not just taking on maybe attitudes I was socialized with, but I've, because of what I've gone through, I have deep beliefs and thoughts that are different from what I had before I experienced these things.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes trauma, and oftentimes trauma, will shake someone's world so much that it forces a reckoning with someone's values. I think Haley, you and I were just talking about this week, and I know Jen, all three of us have talked about this various times, that when someone goes through betrayal trauma, that none of us, and I'm pretty sure this is still true today, have worked with someone with betrayal trauma that hasn't had a faith crisis if they were a person of faith before. That that trauma just shakes so much their relationship with God or their higher power or just their worldview that they every single time experience a faith crisis.
And it's interesting that you say that, because betrayal trauma is an attachment trauma, and God, our relationship and our perception of God is often related to the idea of attachment. If you go to people's belief in a higher power, you'll see that more and more, and you'll see even some of those attachment styles that we've talked about a little bit kind of show up in their spiritual or religious beliefs, depending on the person. But it's really important to recognize is that when you have a foundational shift in whether somebody was able to meet my need who was supposed to, and then suddenly I love that idea of shaken to the core. I don't love the idea because I love the verbiage because it's so cathartic for me to think about, that there is a rebuilding process, and that rebuilding process is not unhealthy.
Yeah, when we realize that what we have isn't working, or for whatever reason, something catastrophic happened, rebuilding gives us an opportunity to assess whether what we have is going to work or not. When London was destroyed by the Great Fire, is that the 1600s? I don't know. I'll look it up later. The great architect at the time, really brilliant man, was going to lay out London in a grid system, kind of like Salt Lake is. And people just immediately started rebuilding that next day. And so London has all these tiny, twisty roads. I like that someone in the midst of the ashes was like, you know what, we can do something different.
It's interesting you bring up Salt Lake, because the Salt Lake is also, you know, they came from all this chaos and they were able to bring in and say, now that I have to start from scratch, I'm going to do it in such a way. And so two very different approaches, but both coming out of traumatic experiences for people and where they live.
I think we've talked about this at the beginning of the trauma section, but when we have emotional wounds, and this applies to post-traumatic growth, we are moved, we're pushed towards doing what looks good and feels good. And when we're through the trauma and we assess how we are doing, or if we're still being impacted by the trauma, and we decide what, you know, doing what looks good and feels good isn't working for us, that often confronts people with their values and say, you know, I'm not living out of my values, or, you know, I'd like to choose different values, or I'd like to live my values differently. And I think that's where this piece of post-traumatic growth often comes in.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
We did an episode on the rupture repair cycle, and this is something that I see with self, right? Is that trauma ruptures, that's guaranteed. And part of what it ruptures is our understanding of self, maybe some values around safety, some awarenesses around organizations, you know, whether it be your family or your community or work or religious, but it's going to create ruptures. And Taylor, you had talked about how almost everyone we work with has some kind of crisis. When I look at that, I think this is when we have a rupture, it's healthy to step away, create some distance, and reevaluate for repair. Repair can only come once we've acknowledged and kind of attended to the ruptures. Too often people, and I see this in trauma, they try and say everything's normal. The goal is to go back to normal. And I can't remember the word, Haley, you said in a couple episodes ago, but instead of normal, I can't remember.
I'm trying to think as
well. Go back to being balanced or something like
balance.
That.
Yeah, I think that was the idea. But when the world changes, your balance has to change. And so it's very appropriate to go through and say, you know what, things I did before this trauma or things I thought or felt, this is part of my personal rupture repair process with myself, with God, with my family, with my community. And if I do things differently, that is authentic to me healing after my trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love seeing how people respond to crisis, not because I think crises are fun, You're definitely that sadistic.
Creepy person.
In the bushes with a camera watching an accident. I think my favorite response to a crisis was Thomas Edison's lab burning down, where he would mostly steal other people's inventions and take credit for them. But he did a lot of good things of his own, right? But it was burning down. It was a complete loss. And he had one of his kids go fetch his wife. He's like, go get your mom. This will be like the coolest fire you ever see. He was like, you know what? There's nothing to be done. Let's just enjoy it. And we'll get back to it tomorrow.
And that is how Taylor has moved through his trauma and learned his own post-traumatic growth. Guys,
come look at this. This is so interesting.
Oh my gosh, this crap show is going to be fascinating. Come watch with me.
Gosh, it's true.
But yeah, I mean, like, not everyone's going to be able to respond that way. Not everyone wants to respond that way. You know, like watching your livelihood go up in smoke. Like, if you're able to like grab the marshmallows, great. Go have some s'mores. We've never seen
that before.
I've never done that. There are other people that were wired a certain way because of childhood experiences. Like my bio dad, we've mentioned him a couple times on the podcast, was a very angry kind of person. And so he treated things as more important than people. And so along came my stepdad, who I refer to as my dad, and he treated people as more important than things, and that broke my brain. And so that was really important in forming who I am. And so I think Rachel, she was in my car at one point and got a little bit of mascara like on the roof or something. Like, she's doing her makeup. I think we hit a pothole or something. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. It's like, it's just a car. It's fine. And I think that was a really important moment for her in our relationship, that I would prioritize her over things.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And again, not only was it kind of a cool moment, but it also led to a deeper connection. Yeah. And so that's exactly what we're talking about in this, is that by moving through things and changing our attitude and reevaluating, we move into, again, those deeper appreciations for life, those better relationships with others.
Well, I just realized I just sold that car last week, the mascara mark. I got to go get a new mascara mark and a new car.
Okay, so now we know what Taylor's doing for date night. Pothole, I think you'll be able to find one.
There's a pothole right here on 1600.
We got to do this. Yeah. We just always want to remind you guys, too, that you're always welcome to email us with any questions. We usually say at the end of the episode, but also it really helps if you rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. It helps us be able to know how we're doing. It helps us be able to, you know, gain visibility for those who need to hear things like that. So just as a reminder, follow us on Instagram, rate, subscribe, and review us. Let us know what's going on, and we really appreciate any feedback we get. So
do you want to mention the giveaway that's coming up?
Yeah, so we are going to be doing a giveaway very soon. You're going to be seeing it on our Instagram sites, as well as Jennifer's therapeutic Instagram, ours here at Xenia, and Jennifer's is Hope and Empowerment Healing. And so we're going to be giving away some books that we've been referencing a million times over, which we're really excited. And so there's going to be three options for books. And so essentially it'll be one of those things of like and subscribe, make comments, things like that on social media. And for everyone, you get a entry. And then those who are raffled for the first picking will get their first choice of book. And then we'll have it kind of go from there for the next two. But we're really excited. So stay tuned. We're going to announce that more on Instagram in the next few weeks. This podcast is coming out a couple weeks later than the ones we've already previously recorded. So I think our raffle, we're saying, is around June.
Well, yeah, the beginning of June is the 1 year anniversary of our first episode dropping. Mm-hmm. Sorry, what were you going to say, Jen?
I was going to make a comment about how one of the books is definitely going to be by Brené Brown, but then I didn't decide to. I don't know if that was necessary.
Atlas of the Heart.
Yep, we've got Atlas of the Heart as one of the books. Absolutely. So we've got. Right,
but I couldn't remember. So that's where my head was.
And then Attached and Body Keeps the Score.
Was it Body Keeps the Score or Atomic Habits? I can't remember which one we decided.
Atomic Habits is one of our books of the month.
Yes. Did we do Body Keeps the Score? I think we were doing a different one.
Stay tuned.
You don't really like that one, so we'll see. But yeah,
I do think Atomic Habits is a really good one.
Yeah, so we'll stay tuned. We're still talking it through. And if you have insight of what you would like one of the raffle books to be, we apparently have a wild card opening. So let us know. But just as a reminder, we appreciate all the input and the feedback, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.